Hello, I'm Tony Cotillo. This is number 0434, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0434. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Andy Curry, who talks about Bigfoot at Pikes Peak in Colorado. Many people who live in the area believe the creature does exist.
I gave a speech on Pikes Peak about 6-7 months ago, and I talked a lot about Pikes Peak, and then I brought up the Bigfoot thing, and I would say half the people in the room were grimacing, and the other half were nodding their head. So it kind of depends who you talk to, but I can tell you that there have been sightings in the town Manitou at the base of Pikes Peak, and apparently on the mountain.
Michael Perry is the author of The Jesus Cow. He's back on the show. He skewers religion and small communities just a little bit.
So I was raised in this very obscure fundamentalist Christian sect, and one of the things is we didn't celebrate Christmas. It was viewed as a pagan holiday. And so I always joke that I was a member of a Christian sect so severe they were taking the Christ out of Christmas before the secular humanists.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. And just in time for Christmas, Book Banter offers some books that should be on your wish list or your holiday shopping list. So get ready to deck the bookshelves very soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0434 was Tony Cotillo, who is a sports expert. You may have heard him on the show in the past on a couple occasions. He's also the host of a new show called The Heat Ratio, which is on Wildfire Radio. And you can check him out online at PhillyInfluencer.com. That's PhillyInfluencer.com. Thank you very much, Tony, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at Patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? It was the wee hours of the morning, and Alex Bowen was hungry, drunk, and unable to sleep. So he did what many Americans would do. He went to a Waffle House, in this case in West Columbia, South Carolina. He walked up to the register. No one was there. He waited 10 minutes. No one turned up. He walked out and looked around. Still, no Waffle House employees. But Bowen was hungry. He was at a Waffle House. And he was going to eat. So he made himself a sandwich and even cleaned the grill when he was done and took pictures to post online. I give all the credit to my old friend Vodka, he said later. At some point, he did spot a worker who was asleep in a booth. Waffle House said the sleeper would be disciplined. And in a related note, obviously Alex has some cooking skills, and we'd like to talk to him about a job since we may have something for him, the chain said. Well, just as long as he doesn't have to prepare his own paycheck. I mean, our world has become way too much self-service, don't you think? Oh, but we're not done with the Waffle House. While Claire Sheets and her husband were waiting for their food at a Waffle House in Tallahassee, Florida, her husband was idly sipping on the water he was served when he noticed something odd in the glass. It's a whole frog in a water drink, Sheets told a reporter later. You have hairs in your food sometimes and maybe a little piece of plastic from packaging, but this is an amphibian. You definitely lose your appetite immediately. Now, the manager apologized for the frog, but the couple complained to the state health department anyway. Inspectors found 11 health violations at the restaurant, including excess dust, excess grease, and food stored at an improper temperature. but no frogs. My husband and I have always enjoyed Waffle House, she'd said, but being that that happened, it kind of puts a bad taste in your mouth. Wow, that's an understatement. Okay, I'm not defending the restaurant in any way, shape, or form, but I've seen the pictures to accompany this story. As usual, restaurants serve water in a clear glass, and the liquid itself is clear. How do you end up sipping from a glass that has an entire dead frog in it without noticing it first before you put your lips to it? That's what I'd like to know. Meanwhile, Emily Coakley went to her bank in Philadelphia and made a withdrawal. When she got home and counted her money, she believed that she had been shorted by $400. Rather than call the bank to inquire whether they made a mistake, she headed down there, went up to the counter, and, witnesses say, pointed a revolver at an employee and demanded $400. Coakley was escorted out of the bank by police without handcuffs. She's 86 years old and needed her hands free to use her walker. FBI agents examined Emily's .38 caliber revolver and found that the gun was not loaded, but she was carrying bullets with her. Emily was charged with aggravated assault, robbery, weapons violations, making terroristic threats, and related offenses, police said. She was released without having to pay bail. Well, I guess she didn't have to pay bail because nobody wanted her to need to do any banking anytime soon. Okay, like the last story with the frog, I have to put the onus on the other side here. In this case, little old Emily. I mean, she should know better. We were always taught as kids that when you go to the bank to withdraw a decent-sized amount of money, the teller counts it out in front of you, and you repeat the process and count it out in front of them. Problem solved. Yeah. Anyway, we have one more story here in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Clare County, Michigan sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a suspicious vehicle at a house in Hayes Township. The deputy found an SUV had, in fact, crashed into the house, and worse, he alleged the driver was drunk, with a blood alcohol level measured at 0.24%. 38-year-old David Wesley Wright claimed that he had just finished a repair on his Dodge Durango and was taking it for a test drive at 1:30 in the morning. Wright was arrested and charged with third offense drunken driving and held on $10,000 bond. It's unclear when the home's owner will get a chance to clean up the mess caused by the crash. He's in jail. You see, Wright crashed into his own home. Well, this will be a fairly interesting homeowner's insurance claim, won't it? Also, one question begs to be asked, and it has various levels. Did the post-repair test drive fail because David was driving drunk? Or did it fail because the repairs were done while David was drunk? See the conundrum here? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Everyone has heard of Bigfoot, the extremely tall, ape-like creature that walks like a man and has been sighted numerous times over hundreds of years. Native Americans have more than 60 ways to refer to this creature, including Sasquatch. But most people don't know that one U.S. city actually believes that Bigfoot exists, as does the state in which the city is located. Andy Curry lives in that city and operates the website Pike's Peak for Sale, which is something else we will also talk about. He joins us on the line via Skype from Colorado City, Colorado. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
Gotcha.
So you live in an area that is really into Bigfoot. Do most people in the area believe in Bigfoot?
You know, that's a great question. I gave a speech on Pike's Peak about 6-7 months ago, and I talked a lot about Pike's Peak, and then I brought up the Bigfoot thing, and I would say half the people in the room were grimacing and the other half were nodding their head. So it kind of depends who you talk to, but I can tell you that there have been sightings in the town Manitou at the base of Pike's Peak and apparently on the mountain.
And which side of that equation do you fall on?
I'm undecided. And I'll tell you why. When I was giving that speech, after I got done, this gentleman, whose name is Max, came up to me. And he is German, of German descent, but he's an American citizen. And he's very intelligent, and he has a stellar military background. And the way, and the reason I tell you all that is, he's not, what shall I say, dumb. He's not an idiot, that kind of thing. But he came up to me and he said, "I saw the creature," in his thick German accent. And I said, "What do you mean you saw the creature?" "I saw it. It was, I was outside my front door. I looked over and there was, I think he said, two or three of them." And he described that they were huge and hairy. And when he said huge, he really put emphasis on that word. And I said, "How far away were they?" And he said, "Several hundred feet." And this coming from a man who's very intelligent. And, I mean, he really believed it.
Now, we live in an age where technology is literally at our fingertips. I mean, you know, I remember all those old grainy pictures of seeing a Sasquatch, or over in Scotland, the Loch Ness Monster, and it's always bad grainy pictures. You really can't see anything. But with today's technology, with drones that people can buy and all these things, why aren't we getting better shots of these things?
I wondered that myself. I don't have an answer for that. And you know, you asked me what side of the table I'm on. I'm undecided because of what my friend Max said. But, you know, why haven't they found skeletons of these creatures, for instance? And but even on Pike's Peak, there was a park ranger that claimed to have seen Pike's Peak. And that's pretty unusual because all the other park rangers just kind of poo-poo the idea. So I don't know the answer to that.
Now, the area you're located in, it is a tourist attraction, just the landscape of the land itself, but also a little bit of the lore. So does that muddy the waters, kind of, because there are people who definitely do believe it, and there are those who just want to believe it for the sake of commerce?
I would say it does muddy the waters, because, as you said in your introduction, Colorado, to my knowledge, is the only state that requires, and it's mandated by law, to have a sign on the highway up to the summit of Pike's Peak, because there were citizens from the sightings who were actually very concerned about tourists coming and possibly being harmed. They wanted them to be aware of it. And there's a lot of people that say, "No, it's not there," but there's the citizens going, "Yeah, but people have seen it." And so, yes, the waters are muddied. And I think, you know, for commerce, as you say, that doesn't hurt, you know, to give it a boost. It is fascinating. In fact, on the summit of the mountain, there's a gift shop up there, and they sell stuffed animal Bigfoots. So I think you're right.
I was just about to ask you, all the stories we hear about it, is the explanation or the description of what Bigfoot looks like, are they always the same, or has that now been muddied again by things like keychains and tchotchkes that you can buy at the as a souvenir?
You know, I think the general descriptions are kind of the same, that they are very tall and very hairy and walk on 2 feet, or paws, or whatever you want to call them. That's kind of the general description. When I was doing some research on that, there's a small town called Green Mountain Falls, which is probably about 8 or 10 miles from where I live here in Colorado Springs. And it's sort of at the base of Pike's Peak where it is. And there was a citizen there who said that a creature like Bigfoot was stirring around on their deck, on their porch, and some of its hair got caught in the screen door of this person's house. And they had the DNA tested, and they couldn't decide if it was human or animal.
Wow.
And I think That was on 60 Minutes several years ago. Hmm. 60 Minutes. Do you have 60 Minutes
Absolutely.
In Canada?
Of course. Yes.
Okay. So, I don't know.
I mentioned in the introduction you have a website, Pike's Peak for Sale. So, let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
You're the only person who can legally sell Pike's Peak.
That is correct.
How did that come to be?
That's a great question. I was up on the summit a few years ago, and I was just really taken aback by the view and just how beautiful it is up there. And I asked a park ranger if I could take home some rocks and dirt. And he said, well, if you're caught, you'll be fined $5,000 and maybe have 6 months in jail. And that kind of ticked me off because I'm paying taxes to have somebody tell me to throw me in jail for something that I pay taxes to help and protect. But then I got to thinking, you know, national parks are protected because they'll get torn up if they're not protected. And I understood it, but I still wanted that. And so I did some research, spent a couple of years doing it, and then I figured out a way to do it. And I talked to lots of politicians, I talked to government employees and that kind of thing, and there's a little loophole that I figured out, and no one is doing this but me. And in fact, we've had the contents certified by a Colorado geologist that lives here, so people don't think that it's, you know, taken out of someone's backyard, for instance. Mm.
What is the big appeal of Pike's Peak, you know, besides Bigfoot, of course?
Pike's Peak has lots of different things going for it. There are 250,000 visitors a year that go to it, and one of the big things that it has that no other mountain in the world has is the Pikes Peak International Hill Climb. And that's a car race. It's the second oldest one in the world, and they race up to the top of the summit. And there are like 100 and how many turns are there? Let's see. There's 156 turns on the way up to the summit. The race course is about 12 and a half miles long, and by the time they get to the top, there are 14,155 feet up there. And people from all over the world come and do that. It's people love to climb it. When Thomas Jefferson, America's third president, did the Louisiana Purchase, it was almost an accident that he bought Pike's Peak with it. Because originally he wanted to buy New Orleans because it was a port city for shipping. But Napoleon Bonaparte of France said, hey, I need to sell the rest of our territory there because we need to finance our war. How about I give you a deal on it? And Thomas Jefferson went, sure. And then a big chunk of millions of acres were included in that purchase, and unbeknownst to him, Pike's Peak was in it. And so it's a big part of America. And it also inspired the famous song, America the Beautiful. So lots of allure to it.
Now, when we say you're the only man who can legally sell Pike's Peak, what exactly are you selling, and how does one get their hands on it if they want to purchase a piece of Pike's Peak? Which I shouldn't say three times fast, I'm guessing.
That's a great question. What they're getting is actual soil from Pike's Peak that is in a bottle. It is sealed, and it comes with a certificate of authenticity that it is actual Pike's Peak soil. And we also send along a placard that has some really fascinating facts. And so the bottle that it's in is shaped sort of like a vintage milk bottle. It's a miniature bottle, but it's real attractive, and it's a fun piece of history to have.
And who's usually buying this? Is it people who originally lived in the area, people who vacationed in the area, or people who just want a piece of Pike's Peak?
Actually, all the above, especially if you're a history buff or an outdoor enthusiast, it's fun to have because, you know, it's a piece of history you can hold in your hand. It's a great conversation piece, and it's fun to show other people. So, yeah, all the above.
Now, if only you could include a little bit of Bigfoot's hair.
That would really be something.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is pikespeakforsale.com. Andy, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, thanks for having me.
Andy Curry, who operates the website Pikes Peak for Sale. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this show, which is show number 0434, and you'll find links to Andy's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's now gluten-free.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of The Jesus Cow, plus Stuart Nellman will be in with another edition of Book Banter. We do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and lots more Stuff File news also here on a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this an even bigger and better radio experience. And by the way, just want to say very quickly, e-reader fans, I have some news for you. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is, just in time for the holidays, available for the Kindle. So, if you're against dead tree versions of books, now's your time, folks. Remember, inside the pages of Great Conversations, you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and the ever-popular Much, Much More, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. So, now's your chance. Go to Amazon.com or Amazon.ca and find the book, also now available for the Kindle. And by the way, if you still like dead trees, there's also the softcover and hardcover editions, which are also available. But for you e-reader fans, it's there, waiting for you right now. Okay, let's get back to the stuff, shall we? A science teacher at Southland Boys High School in Invercargill, New Zealand, has lost her license to teach. I didn't do anything improper, but it looked improper, admits Dawn Patricia Ganaha. The main thing she did that got parents up in arms was show her Year 9 advanced science class a video on the subject, 10 Things You Don't Know About Orgasms. Why? Because kids get so bored with learning about the basic stuff that they do, and all I wanted to do was make it interesting, Dawn said. Several students told the principal they were uncomfortable with the TED video. Here's a quote. I was quite shocked, one boy said. I didn't see it coming. Well, that might have been a poor choice of words, when you think about it. Anyway, Nick and Sarah Jensen of Australian Capital Territory may soon be ending their 10-year marriage. The reason? In a non-binding referendum, Australians voted overwhelmingly to legalize same-sex marriage. As Nick promised in a letter to a local newspaper before the vote, my wife and I, as a matter of conscience, refuse to recognize the government's regulation of marriage if its definition includes the solemnization of same-sex couples. Sydney lawyer Michael Tice has said he will offer free legal support for the couple's divorce. My firm does quite a bit of pro bono work in family law each year in the gay, lesbian, and trans community. I thought offering assistance to Nick and Sarah would be an excellent way to reach out across communities with my family law expertise because, quite simply, they are going to need it. Because Australian law requires a marriage to have broken down irretrievably in order to have grounds for a divorce, Tice said the divorce will be tricky. But after our divorce, Jensen said, we'll continue to live together, hopefully for another 50 years. Yeah, well, nothing makes more sense than to blow up your own marriage just to make a point about the lives of other people that don't concern you. Also, there's no better way to demonstrate the sanctity of marriage than by divorce, huh? Yeah. A skydiving Santa looking to make a grand entrance while taking an elf on the shelf to a 9-year-old girl crashed into a tree and light pole before hitting a Florida beach and breaking his leg. George Crocus was dressed as Santa Claus during a skydive to deliver toys to the Tampa Bay Beach Bums Operation Santa Charity Volleyball Tournament. Madison Spears saw the crash and later found a note from the elf named Kristoff, who visits her house during the holidays. It said, "As we were about to land, this big tree jumped out right in front of us." The elf sported a bandaged leg while staying with the recovering Crocus. Perhaps Santa should have stuck to his traditional sleigh in this case, don't you think? Which reminds me, how much cardio does Santa have to do to get through the preparation for his lead-up to the big night anyway? I mean, that's a lot of climbing he's got to do, up and down those chimneys. And carrying those bags, it's got to add a certain amount of weight. Got to get that cardio done. Santa's no spring chicken, you know. Anyway, an Oregon mother targeted by package thieves got back at the culprits with a decoy box filled with her infant son's soiled diapers. Angie Boliak posted a photo to Facebook showing the box of diapers she put out for thieves on her porch, along with a note reading, "Enjoy this, you thief." Boliak said the initial stolen package contained four-month-old Ben's new Christmas pajamas. The mother said she put the box of dirty diapers out on Sunday, and it was gone by Monday evening. "I wanted to get my own, I guess, passive-aggressive revenge," Boliak said. Boliak reported the theft to the police, and she and her husband are looking into installing a security camera on their porch. You know, I love this story, but my only concern is any potential follow-up revenge that the perpetrators might come up with. Other than that, they pretty much got what they deserved. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the mayor of a small Florida city has been arrested on allegations that she used dead people's disabled parking permits to park at City Hall. The Polk County Sheriff's Office said Davenport Mayor Darlene Bradley was arrested and faces felony charges for using a deceased person's ID. She's also been charged with possessing an altered or counterfeit decal. The Sheriff's Office said Bradley was videotaped parking in the disabled spot recently, and that a search of her home led to the discovery of permits issued to two people who have died. The mayor was booked into the Polk County Jail and released after posting $2,250 in bond. Wow. Using dead folks' handicapped parking passes. Nice. Oh, there's an extra warm place for her waiting in hell. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Michael Perry is back on the show. He's a New York Times best-selling author, humorist, and radio show host from Wisconsin. We had him on the show in May of last year, back on show number 0352, to talk once again about his book, The Jesus Cow. I thought it was time to talk to him again as we approach the holidays. The book is described as a comic yet sincere exploration of faith in the face of the modern world. And Michael joins us on the line via Skype from Wisconsin. Hi, Michael.
Hey, how are you doing? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you again, too. As I said, we spoke in May of last year. I guess just when your book came out in paperback, I thought it was timely to talk about it now because the holidays are coming up, considering the topic matter. And let's be honest, you sent out a press release.
I'm a self-employed writer, so yeah, you bet. I'll take advantage of any opportunity to talk about my work.
Yeah. So I thought I'd talk to you once again because it was an interesting conversation we had the last time. We spoke in the past on my old radio show about some of your previous books, but when you did The Jesus Cow, this was your first fictional novel, right?
Correct. Yeah, I had not done any novels for adults, and it was my first foray into that area. I enjoyed it. I liked not having to fact check everything. I liked being able to just come up with stuff in my head and put it on the page. I also, as anyone would know who knows me or who is familiar with my earlier books, drew heavily on my own background growing up in rural Wisconsin with cows and whatnot. But yeah, it was I really enjoyed working in fiction.
One of the things that caught my eye again, and this is from your press material, and that is the quote, the line from your book, and I'll share it here. On Christmas Eve itself, the bachelor Harley Jackson stepped into his barn and beheld there illuminated in the straw a smallish newborn bull calf upon whose flank was born the very image of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Well, Harley said, that's trouble.
Yeah, that comes from, I come from loggers and farmers from northern Wisconsin. And one of the things I've always gotten a kick out of is how they'll look at something that may have great portent or may be trouble, and they'll remark about it, but it's usually in this very understated way. So here this guy looks at this cow and in an instant just realizes, this is really going to change my life. But instead of getting hysterical, he just says, well, that's trouble. And I'm reminded of my brothers run heavy equipment. And I remember one of my brothers running a big backhoe track hoe one time, and a piece broke that literally almost broke the large implement in two. And you're talking about five figures of breakage there. I mean, this is not something where you would buy a new bolt or just weld it up. And so here he has this tremendous breakdown, and my other brother just looks at him and goes, how's that going for you then? So there's just this history of being very understated about big trouble.
The thing that caught my eye about the quote itself is the fact that, and again, you wrote this book a little while ago, but we live in different social times, different political times. Does your book take on a new meaning in the time we live in?
Well, yeah, I think just about everything I've written takes on new meaning. I just got off book tour for a new book I have called Montaigne in Barn Boots, which is about the French philosopher Montaigne. But a lot of that book has to do with me writing about what it's like to live in two worlds where you value philosophy and thought and reflection. And yet I still live in rural Wisconsin. I still live in a place where it's become evident to me recently that, oh, let's say about 70% of my neighbors don't agree with me politically. And so the Jesus cow is the same thing. It's that idea that I was raised a fundamentalist Christian. I'm an agnostic now, which is kind of a bumbling guy. I always say I ain't looking for trouble. I'm just looking. My parents are still in that church I was raised in, and I love them, and I respect them, and I would be nothing without them. That doesn't mean I still believe what they do. And I think the character in the Jesus cow is trying to navigate this. He's trying to be respectful and thoughtful, and yet he's also been put in a spot where he can't pretend to believe something he doesn't really believe. And I think when I look back at the times when I wrote that, and then just so much that has happened just in the last few years, there was a time when I thought you could potentially navigate these things. Lately, I'm a little more nervous about whether you can just get along with folks. I don't have the answer, that's for sure, and I'm going to do my best to do it locally on my own. But yeah, current events are pressing in on all of us, I believe.
With the holiday aspect of the story, also the down-home humor of the characters, both the protagonist and the other characters around him, there's almost a, shall we say, a Frank Capra-esque quality about your writing. Would you kind of agree with that?
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Capra, but you know, it's funny you'd ask that because just tonight I'm waiting for my wife and my daughters to come home. And so I was raised in this very obscure fundamentalist Christian sect. And one of the things is we didn't celebrate Christmas. It was viewed as a pagan holiday. And so I always joke that I was a member of a Christian sect so severe they were taking the Christ out of Christmas before the secular humanists. But I grew up not really celebrating Christmas. And then over time on my own, I sort of decided I didn't really like how it got overdone. And then I've come full circle to where now I can't wait for my kids to get home because we're going to go out back and we'll cut a tree and we'll put up some lights and we'll have this lovely thing to look at for the next month. And there's a lot of that in the Jesus cow. I wrote scenes where one of the characters is up in the water tower looking down at this snow-covered town during Christmas. And that's just a frank acknowledgement of my own sentimentality. I still have mixed feelings about Christmas, but I love the beauty of it and the quiet of it and the reflective elements of it. So, yeah, that's definitely a part of the book.
I spoke to you again. It was May of 2016. The book was just coming out in paperback at the time when we last spoke. What's the reaction been since we last talked, which is about a year and a half ago, or a little more than a year and a half?
Well, I'm still waiting for the multi-million dollar movie deal. Hasn't happened yet. you know, mostly good. It's interesting. There's a certain percentage of my audience. I had a few people who weren't happy with me for writing about this particular topic in this particular way. And I can only respond to them by saying I reserve the right to find humor in all things, religion included. And often the comments that I would get that were negative, just the very nature of the comment made it clear that the person hadn't actually read the book. In general, folks, I think, have liked it. It's one of those, you know, some books you write that don't do well at all, other books you write that do really well, and then there are books like The Jesus Cow, where it's not my best-selling book, but the people who like it really like it. For instance, because of these press releases we just sent out, I've had this little flurry of emails saying, this is my favorite book of all the ones you've written. And so it's interesting. Different people react different ways. I think anyone who, you know, it is one of those books that's filled with a lot of reflection and consideration of very serious theological issues, but it's also just got a bunch of goofy fun in it, too. And because I've never been able to write one, it's got an explosion.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, some books sell better than others. What's the process like for you when you sit down to write? I mean, you can't really sit down and say, I'm going to write a bestseller. Do you have to write for yourself first and hope that the audience finds it, as opposed to trying to tailor your writing for an audience that you may or may not have?
I personally have to write something that I care about and I'm invested in. Having said that, when you're in my position, which is my books sell just enough that I can get book deals, but they don't sell so much that I can name my price, I have to first convince the publisher. So I have to, A, find an idea that appeals to me. Then I have to go to the publisher and say, here's my idea, here's how I will create the book, here's the storyline. And then if they say yes, then we move forward. So it does start with, I have to be interested, I have to care. But then there is a very pretty cold-hearted process where the publisher will just say yes or no. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm set free to write, then it's just a matter of sitting down and bringing the thing to fruition.
Well, the book is called The Jesus Cow, and as I said, it's perfectly timed for the holidays, and people can check out your website and order the book, and if they do it before noon central on December 20th, they should be able to get the book in their hot little hands in time for Christmas, so they have between now and the 20th of December if they want to get this book as a gift.
Yep, and the website is sneezingcow.com, sneezing as in sneezing, cow as in cow, all together, no space between that, sneezingcow.com. And the book is also available through your local independents and your regular bookstores. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it. But if you do order it directly from sneezingcow.com, I literally just 30 minutes ago came from the city where they do my distribution, and I signed every copy of The Jesus Cow. So if you order it, it'll be a signed copy.
Excellent. The book is called The Jesus Cow. Michael, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again, and best of the holidays to you.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Michael Perry, author of The Jesus Cow. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0434, and you'll find links to Michael's site where you can order the book before noon central on December 20th, and that will guarantee that it will be in your hands before Christmas. And it will make a lovely gift. All books ordered directly from his website, by the way, are signed by the author. You'll also find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As we celebrate the season of giving, I'd like to share a story about how one charity's efforts to practice the Golden Rule were severely tested by an ill-advised lawsuit. A Florida soup kitchen called Love Thy Neighbor has provided meals to the homeless for years. Then one day, the charity was served with a lawsuit. The reason? A business named Love Your Neighbor claimed its potential customers might be confused if the charity continued to operate with a similar-sounding name. You heard that right. Love Your Neighbor was suing Love Thy Neighbor. The charity was forced to defend itself in federal court during months of litigation. Fortunately, the charity eventually won. Yet because of all the money it had to spend, it was anything but a heavenly ending. The founder of the charity told me that the money it had to spend on lawyers could have provided meals to 40,000 people. Let's be fair. America would be much better off if we all focused more on the Golden Rule and less on using court rules to sue each other so often. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And with a roundup for holiday books, it's the elf on a shelf himself, Stuart Nauman.
Well, at least he didn't say in the hollow tree, making cookie.
Hello, sir.
Hi, Peter. How's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Happy Hanukkah and best of the holiday season to you.
Yes, thank you, and all the best to you. You know, it's that most wonderful time of the year again. And, you know, besides the holidays and the movies and the music, and I love the music, one part, integral part of the Christmas holiday season is the shopping. You know, buying gifts for your loved ones, or your family, and friends, and hopefully, you know, these are, you know, things that will, you know, be on their wish list, and, you know, they'll make great gifts. But I know one type of gift that will rarely, if ever, make it to the returns complaints line as of December 26th. That's books.
Absolutely.
Yes. And like we always do around this time of year, I have a few suggestions of books that should be on your wish list or your gift list.
And people, when it comes to Christmas, they tend to seem to either want to give or receive, for lack of a better term, coffee table books or epics,
yeah.
Something that's more than just, you know, a Harlequin romance or the latest autobiography, something that has heft and substance to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like they want a keepsake kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah, something that can be put literally on the coffee table.
Yeah, and it's like the latest James Patterson will just not cut it this time, guys. Sorry.
So what do you recommend for this holiday season?
Well, first of all, a book called Montreal 1909 by Robert Wilkins. He's a local historian who really has a passion for Montreal's history, and it shows in a big way with this book called Montreal 1909. It's basically a month-by-month, day-by-day look at what went on in Montreal, both significant and mundane, throughout the year of 1909. Now, why Wilkins chose this year is unclear. I mean, the only significant event that happened that year that people still remember is that was the year the Montreal Canadiens were established. But you know what? This book is, I find, a pretty absorbing snapshot of a Montreal that is no longer around. It's no more, and it's just a faint memory. And you know, it's a great way of appreciating the way Montreal used to be,
for better or for worse.
For better or for worse, and there was a lot of worse in our city and in Montreal at that time, especially when it comes to water quality and, you know, health issues, very bad. But there was some interesting stuff too.
Okay, so the book is?
Montreal 1909 by Robert Wilkins, published by Shoreline, and it's $35.
And
next, Obama, an intimate portrait by Pete Souza. You know, it's been almost a year since Barack Obama finished his two terms as the 44th president of the United States, yet he still fascinates us, and in some respects, we still miss him. Now, Pete Souza has been Obama's official White House photographer, and his camera has so effectively chronicled his remarkable career in politics, and the end result is his wonderful coffee table book that recently reached the number one spot in the New York Times bestseller list. And Souza has done a remarkable job choosing the right photos for this book. He took over 2 million photos during 8 years.
And 2 million photos?
2 million photos.
Wow. You know, I was a photo student in CEGEP in college, and I've taken pictures for years. I don't think I've taken 1 million photos.
Well, don't forget, he didn't have the task of, you know, developing the film.
But even so, in, you know, he, I'm talking a lifetime. You're talking 8 years.
Yeah, 8 years. Well, he was always on call. He almost, like, practically never left Obama's side.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, those photos I selected for the book shows many sides of Barack Obama as the chief executive and commander-in-chief, as a father and husband, and as a warm, compassionate human being, whether it be during some lighthearted behind-the-scenes moments, official events and ceremonies, or moments that tested his will and his country's will. It's almost like we get an exclusive backstage pass type of look at what it's like to be the President of the United States.
It's a great photo book. I've seen excerpts of it, and it is amazing.
Oh, it is, certainly is. And there's even a deluxe edition that's it comes with a slipcase cover and a print that's suitable for framing, and it's on much more glossier matte-type paper. But still, a wonderful book to leaf through, and I understand why it hit the top of the bestseller list. It's wonderful. It really is.
And that book is called?
Obama, An Intimate Portrait by Pete Souza, published by Little Brown, and it's $52.
Anything else on the list you want to share?
Well, there's, if you, I have a good stocking stuffer, if you like.
Yep.
Stephen Colbert, he, you know, of course everyone knows Stephen Colbert, host of his Late Show talk show on CBS. He has a book called Stephen Knight Confessions, and it's the ultimate stocking stuffer. It's based on a regular feature that's on his talk show, in which he displays his glib, pointed sense of humor in a collection of what he calls midnight confessions that deal with his brief take on a whole variety of topics, whether it be everyday life, religion, family life, technology, or America, which are funny, provocative, or sometimes downright outrageous. My favorite confession in the book is when he says, "I haven't finished a book in 20 years. Don't tell me how the Bible ends. I think Jesus is going to pull this one out."
I've seen him talk about his book on his show, so I know that's a great stocking stuffer idea. So the book is?
It's called Stephen Colbert's Midnight Confessions by Stephen Colbert. And it's in, you know, it even includes a space where you can do your own midnight confessions. So that's a nice little bonus. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $26.99.
Can I add one book to your list?
Sure, you sure can.
I've got a coffee table book that I want to suggest. The 100, it's called 100, A Century of NHL Memories by Phil Pritchard and Jim Hines. It features rare photos from the Hockey Hall of Fame covering its 100 years of existence. It's an amazing coffee table book. It's got, since it's got 100 years worth of pictures, it goes from early black and whites up right up to the modern day color. But I got to tell you, I think it's some of those early black and whites that are much more appealing to look at, only because back in those days, not only was it more rudimentary when it comes to the hockey and the photography involved, but just the arenas themselves weren't lit up like daylight like they are now. So seeing photos where what's in the focal point of the picture is lit up, but everything else in the background is in shadows, just adds something to the mystique of the older pictures, which I think is an amazing coffee table book. If anybody out there's got a fan, a family member or a friend who is a fan of the NHL, this would be a book that would be great to hand out. It is published by Griffintown Media. And it sells for $49.95, rather.
And also, it's available in English and French. So if you're buying this book, look out for a picture of Toronto Maple Leafs goalie George Hainsworth on the cover of the English edition, and a picture of Rocket Richard and some of the members of the Montreal Canadiens going to their old forum locker room on the French cover of the French edition.
Absolutely. So that's it, sir. Anything else we've left out?
I think that pretty well covers all the bases, Peter. I think we got a good selection that listeners can go out to the bookstores and shop, you know, as gifts, or, you know, make those subtle hints of what they would like under the tree for them this Christmas.
So I'm going to go back to making sugar plums, and you're going to go back to making dreidels.
and latkes. And don't forget the latkes.
And latkes. So best of the holiday spirit to you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Peter, and all the best to you. And, of course, best wishes for not only the holiday season, but for 2018 as well.
And not only during the holiday season, but also in the new year. How can people find you?
Well, they can always find me in the pages of Montreal Times in print every Saturday, or, you know, online. We have a digital edition. Just go to www.mtltimes.ca.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about into the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, but I've got a few more Stuff File news stories that I want to share with you right here, right now, starting with Stacy Scott of Anchorage, Alaska. Stacy arrived home on November 24th to find thousands of dollars worth of clothing and jewelry missing, along with a signature item, George the Mounted Zebra Head, which was a gift from a friend. The thief was bold enough to call a taxi to use as the getaway car and loaded the zebra head into its trunk, all of which was caught on surveillance camera at Scott's home. Anchorage police tracked down and arrested 38-year-old Desiree Fuller for felony burglary and theft and recovered most of Scott's items. But George remained at large until the cab driver saw a story on KTVA-TV and contacted them. He had been holding the zebra hostage because Fuller neglected to pay her cab fare. In the spirit of the season, George is home for the holidays. Well, for stealing a stuffed striped animal, it looks like Desiree will herself become a striped animal stuffed in a cell. A police interrogation of a Kansas City man charged with drug and gun offenses ended prematurely when an investigator was driven from the room by the suspect's excessive flatulence. A detective reported that when asked for his address, 24-year-old Sean Sykes Jr. leaned to one side of his chair and let a loud one rip before answering. The Kansas City Star reports that Sykes continued to be flatulent, and the detective was forced to quickly end the interview. Sykes later appeared in court charged with being a felon in possession of 3 firearms and possession with intent to sell cocaine. So, the justice system still has a gas chamber, just not the one you normally think of. An unnamed man in Frankfurt, Germany, called police 20 years ago to report his Volkswagen Passat missing, believing it had been stolen. In November of this year, the car was found just where the driver had left it, according to Metro News, in a parking garage that is now scheduled to be demolished. Police drove the 76-year-old to the garage to be reunited with his car, which is unfit to drive, before sending it off to the scrap heap. I'm guessing he will now be receiving correspondence from a very stern insurance company. The man in the shark suit was promoting McShark, an electronics store that had opened a new location in Vienna, Austria. But that wasn't all he was doing. He was also baiting the police, who fined him 150 euros, that's about 176 bucks US, when he refused to take off the costume head. The stunt was a challenge to Austria's ban on face covering. The law is aimed at suppressing the burqa, but is not limited to religious attire. Warda Network, a PR firm, declined to deny it had called the police on its own man, but it did boast that for 150 euros, it had gotten 50 million clicks on the viral story. So, who says there isn't moral character in advertising or an underlying agenda? Yes. Anyway, boys and girls, it's now the time you've been waiting for. Yes, it's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
5 firefighters spent an hour working to release a YouTube prankster who had cemented his head inside a microwave oven. The 22-year-old and a group of friends mixed 7 bags of polyfilla before pouring it around his head, which was protected by a plastic bag inside the appliance. Their intention was to use the microwave as a mold. By the time emergency services were called to the garage of a house in Wolverhampton, West Midlands, England, the group had already been trying to free him for 90 minutes. The friends had managed to help the man breathe through an air tube, Watch Commander Sean Dakin, the officer in charge of the West Midlands Fire Service crew who responded, said, "As funny as this sounds, this young man could quite easily have suffocated or have been seriously injured. Taking the microwave apart was tricky because a lot of it was welded. We video called our technical rescue colleagues for advice and eventually managed to get him unstuck. He was very relieved when we removed a large chunk of the polyfilla with a screwdriver, allowing him to breathe more easily. But we had to be extremely careful with the screwdriver working so closely to his head. It took us nearly an hour to free him. All of the group involved were very apologetic, but this was clearly a call-out which might have prevented us from helping someone else in genuine accidental need. Now, why? Oh, why? Even though these clowns' video has been seen by over 1 million people, would you cement your head inside a microwave? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0434. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0434. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Evolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. The Stuff File reminds you never try to drown your sorrows. Don't just learn to swim anyway.